with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Hauck.
Okay, good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. Very excited to be with you here today and every other Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And each and every other week, these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of our spirituality and our mental health, all within the context of our relationships with ourselves, others, and God or the divine. And that relationship is key. That is, let's put it into a nice mathematical term here. That is the common denominator in everything that we do, because everything that we do, everything we say, everything, how we heal and so forth, always brings us back to the relationships that we are in. No man is an island, as John Donne has coined the expression. As much as we might enjoy solitude and so forth, we are so interconnected with everybody that it always reminds us of the relationships that we have. Well, how is your heart today? I hope your heart is well. I hope you are well. I hope that if you are struggling today in any way, shape, or form, that you will find the rest that you need, the comfort you need, and the peace that you need. I'm Dr. James Hauck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about today's show, I want you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And I just want to invite you to just a pretty cool show that we have tonight. It's called What Changes When We Begin to Live as Souls? What Changes When We Begin to Live as Souls? And I'm very excited to be talking about this because it's something that's always been near and dear to my heart, that what would it be like if we fully realized ourselves as a soul and then we acted accordingly, and we treated everybody else as a soul. So, again, I hope you stay for the entire hour, and just in case you can't, just want to remind you that tonight's broadcast and other broadcasts are podcasted, in case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. Just go back through the website, look for the archives button, click on that, and then you can pull up any show that you would like to listen to. Well, speaking of relationships, everybody typically asks me, you know, just what exactly do I believe? And how did I come to this understanding that everything we do brings us back to the relationships in our lives? And I typically respond this way, that I have a strong belief, very solid belief, that all of us come into this world already equipped and graced with everything we need for this life, in terms of our giftedness, our skills, our talents, our strengths, our character traits, so on and so forth, the very best of who we are and how we live our giftedness is in and through various relationships. And this aspect is very important when considering exactly who we are as a soul. Because although we may have similar gifts and skills and talents and strengths and character traits, no two people express these identically. In other words, each of us have a thisness about us that cannot be duplicated. Oh, people, you know, can try and imitate how we do things, but no one has the ability to duplicate us. Because within us lies what the 12th century scholar John Duns Scotus referred to as hachaitas, a thisness, a uniqueness, if you will. But unfortunately, millions of people never had a chance to discover their uniqueness because they were often told to look in all the wrong places. For example, you know, even in today's world, we're told to look for that thisness in the externals of life, you know, through the accumulation of things or the accomplishments, you know, the accolades. But this is not where our thisness, our uniqueness, and hachetos is to be found. Instead, the full expression of who we are is to be found within, at the soul level. Because when you think about it, we often receive in our relationships our deepest physical, emotional, psychological, even spiritual wounds in various relationships. And moreover, we often go along in life and maybe we find ourselves in the wrong place at the wrong time or some other unpleasant experiences. We may feel like we need to hide our hachetos, our thisness. Or we're going to push our giftedness way down so that others cannot see it and then exploit it. Or perhaps we were told growing up that we would never amount to anything, or whatever other voice we heard telling us that there's really nothing special to us. All lies. These are all lies. And ironically, these relationships in our lives that have brought us such pain just might be within our own families, just might be with our coworkers. They might even be with our friends. But you know, when we transform, we also transform others by our presence, by grace, by understanding. But first, forgiveness, kindness, and compassion begin really with how we treat ourselves. Because when we are compassionate with ourselves, we can then become more compassionate with others. And when we are more forgiving with ourselves, we then can be more forgiving with others. And when we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves, we then discover how this opens our hearts to see and live in gratitude with others. And when we are able to truly know ourselves as a soul, and live from our soul, it opens us up to understand the potential in others, to see them as a soul. So all in all, first and foremost, transformation begins with us. And this is really what reclaiming authenticity is all about, Charlie Brown. It's my Hindu friends would often say to me, Namaste. And we're just very fond of the teaching that Namaste pretty much means because I see myself as a soul of light. This allows me to greet your lighted soul of who you are. Because I see myself as a soul of light, this allows me to greet and see your lighted soul of who you are. Well, before we get underway tonight, I just wanted to take time out and wish my son a very happy birthday. He's such a fine young man, and it's been a joy to watch him grow and develop into the person who he is. He has a family of his own, and I just couldn't be, you know, prouder than what I am. I just really, my heart is filled with joy. He has just brought all of us a lot of joy and just a delight to be around. And I also would like to wish everybody an early happy Hanukkah. As tomorrow night, December 7th, Hanukkah begins. And as we join in the celebration of lights, my teacher would say, let us all focus on bringing light around all to further protect from darker forces. So let there be light. And if we can focus on light, it will make everyone stronger. And let's remember to thank God and offer whatever help we can with our own abundance, and especially thoughts of healing and light for all. Well, you know this time of the year, all the excitement, the hustle and bustle, and the craziness of the holiday season is upon us, and yet many people often struggle to find beauty and joy, often focusing on the external sights and sounds of the season to lift them out of their depression, or maybe even to quiet their anxieties. And however, there is tremendous joy to be found during this time of the year. But I wanted to ask you to first look within yourself and see your beauty as a soul. Hear your beauty as a soul, and know your beauty as a soul. As my teacher is also fond of saying, that beauty is most often spoken of with reference to worldly relationships and objects. And do not use this word beauty with regard to the physical features of a man or a woman or an expensive object that promotes your status in society. Because how beauty is received and perceived is a reflection of the mind's inner purity and goodness. However, as long as the soul is bound within nature's laws of cause and effect, the deepest essence of beauty, that is the soul, cannot be directly experienced. Well, many people find it very difficult, if not downright resistant, when it comes to truly discovering who they are as a soul. You know, it's as if they consider discovering who I am as being too high of a cost to pay in terms of what they have to let go of in order to discover who they are as a soul. But when you think about it, in the end, when the body is in its transition, you have to let go of everything that we thought we have accumulated in this life. You know, degrees, homes, families, savings accounts, 401ks, even right down to those family secrets that were once promised to be taken to the grave. Everything. So whatever we know, we identify ourselves with that. And in doing so, we limit our understanding of who we truly are. Look within. That is where you'll discover. Well, in the last broadcast, if you were with me a couple of weeks ago, I talked about listening to your soul in silence, drowning out all of the distractions and the to-do lists and other thoughts that are added to this monkey mind of ours that just finds it hard to settle down and just be quiet. But to really quiet yourself within and allow your soul's voice to speak. Well, this week, however, I'm talking more about living from that place, from your soul. And more importantly, what changes when you understand yourself as a vast soul and you begin to live as your soul? Because you see, embracing this reality really changes things up for us. So what exactly changes? Everything. Everything. Relationships change. How we interact with one another changes because we do not see one another based on the externals anymore. We don't focus on problems, but rather we focus on how we can nurture one another as a soul. How we could be there for one another as a soul. How we can support one another as a soul. Well, you and I both know that quite often throughout the history of humanity, people have been defined as important, unimportant, essential, or inessential, all based on externals. That a person's worth was determined based solely upon their exterior. You know, their looks, hairstyles, skin color, and bloodlines. In fact, down through history, there has always been a set of standards out there for the rich and the powerful, and another standard for the poor and the vulnerable. And a time is now upon us when these man-made boundaries, these limitations and standards are being shaken to their very core. Because more and more people are becoming aware of themselves as a soul and They are hungering to live from their soul. And what's transforming is that generations, both now and even those who have yet to be born, are learning to see people for who they are, not from the limited externals of skin color, gender, age, culture, socioeconomic status, but to see one another as souls. And these things do not apply when you understand people as souls. The externals just simply do not matter. Well, despite the fact that we have come a long way, and there's still a long way to go, there have been many moments of helping inner generations reclaim who they are and empowering them to embrace themselves as eternal souls. I think I had shared, I think it was last year at this time, I came across a story about evidence that points to yet another mass grave that was discovered back in May of 2021. And this one was discovered at the Kamloops Industrial School in Kamloops, British Columbia, Canada. And if you've been following me for some time, for years now, you know that this is not the first time that I've talked about such atrocities that have occurred within the residential schools in Canada, as well as the Native American boarding schools and the mass graves found in Tuam, County Galway in Ireland, and the Magdalene laundries, and countless others. And if you're unfamiliar with these, or you don't know what I'm talking about, or other intergenerational traumas, I invite you to order my book, When Ancestors Weep, Healing the Soul from Intergenerational Trauma. You can find it Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other booksellers. When Ancestors Weep. And the Kamloops Indian Residential School was part of the Canadian Indian Residential School System. And as I said, it's located in British Columbia. It was once one of the largest residential schools in Canada. And I think somewhere back in the 1950s, its enrollment peaked around 500 students. And after a year of grieving, you know, since the detection of as many as 215 suspected unmarked graves at the former Kamloops Indian Residential School, a new phase actually begins in the journey of the Tekumlumps Sekwalache First Nation to now bring the missing children home. And the old apple orchard, where the evidence of the graves was found by ground-penetrating radar last year, could soon be the site of an archaeological dig and work to exhume the remains. And this is all according to Chief Roseanne Casimir. And last May, Chief Casimir said a war graves expert using this ground-penetrating radar found what are believed to be, like I said, up to about 215 people buried at an unmarked site at the former school. And since the remains of up to 215 people buried there, the detection of hundreds of more suspected graves connected to this residential schools and others across Canada followed amid a year of reckoning over the legacy of the residential schools for Indigenous children all throughout Canada. And a lot of the Kamloops school survivors say the past year was just a devastating emotional journey that include reawakening this trauma that they experienced and catharsis, there we go. And for some, it brought closure. But way back in 1907, Dr. Peter Bryce, medical inspector for the Department of Indian Affairs, he actually toured the residential schools of Western Canada and British Columbia, and he wrote a very scathing report on the criminal health conditions there. And Dr. Bryce, he reported that the native children were being deliberately infected with diseases like tuberculosis, and then they're left to die untreated as a regular practice. And he cited typically an average death rate of about 40% in the residential schools. Now, despite the subpar health conditions in the residential schools, there was also this underlying philosophy that promoted a more aggressive euthanasia, shall we say, of the so-called savage communities. Because by 1830, Canadian Indians were seen as a drain on the economy of the Crown of England, because the Crown was supporting these Canadian Indians. And so it was believed that the people had to become productive through a means of either evangelization or education or agriculture. And so the residential schools seemed to be the perfect tool for assimilating this race of people. And schools seem harmless enough, you know, but there's a huge difference between the schools and the educational systems they represented. And many, many, many reports and eyewitness accounts of severe emotional, mental, physical, and spiritual abuses that were inflicted upon the children who attended these schools. And for the adult survivors of these traumatic events, it was clearly avoiding thinking about or talking about such topics is very common, because it doesn't take much to feel overwhelmed. It doesn't take much for them to feel re-traumatized. And for example, you know, some people, just to get rid of the pain, you know, had to resort to ingesting alcohol or other substances as a way to numb their feelings or their thoughts related to this trauma. And others may have resorted to forms of self-harm, such as burning themselves or cutting or whatever, that released endorphins to either numb their feelings of trauma, or it creates a sense of feeling alive. You know, maybe some people were just so shut down emotionally that when they would harm themselves, they would feel the pain, but then with the endorphins kicking in, they would actually feel better. Well, in the field of mental health, these and other features and symptoms define what has been known for many, many decades now as PTSD. And yet over time, the recent descriptions of PTSD failed to capture some of the more emerging human experiences, let's say. And there was a need to widen the net even further to include personal captivity or psychological fragmentation, or the loss of a sense of safety or trust or self-worth, as well as the tendency of people to be re-victimized. And all in all, a distinct complexity was emerging in the field of trauma studies, which included a person's loss of a clear sense of who they are. In fact, this unique type of loss as a result of traumatic events goes much, much deeper than simply how we and or others view themselves. It also includes how a traumatic loss contributes to a sense of feeling disconnected from all relationships, resulting in a loss of our core beliefs about who we are. And furthermore, when we lose a sense of who we are perhaps more willing to seek out a sense of self-worth from others, and thereby opening ourselves up and allowing them to define us according to their definitions and their expectations. But by expanding this definition of PTSD, you know, in today's healthcare, mental health and even pastoral professionals are now able to better understand how a prolonged exposure to traumatic effects, really how it affects the psychological well-being of people in their everyday lives. I mean, when trauma is relentless and just day in and day out, and there's no letting up, that it's right there, it just takes its toll. And I also assert that much of the intergenerational trauma can often be traced back to prolonged exposure to traumatic events, especially with the emphasis on the loss of a sense of self so prominent in surviving generations. Well, I would really, really love to hear what's in your heart about this subject. So again, if you would like to call in, the number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after this break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Haupt. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Welcome back. I'm Dr. James Haupt, and you're listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I really do appreciate sharing this time with you each and every other, I should say, Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We certainly have fun just discussing and listening to topics and so forth, and really having a place where we can think about these issues and how they do affect us, and just how this helps us further integrate our spirituality and our mental health, and helping us discover even more of who we are as a soul. Well, earlier in the show, I was talking about a story I came across last year about this time about evidence that points to a mass grave that was discovered back in May of 2021 at the Kamloops Industrial School in Kamloops, British Columbia, Canada. And it was at the old apple orchard behind the school where evidence of these graves was found by a ground-penetrating radar last May, which could soon be the site of an archaeological dig and work to exhume remains. And as a result of this and many other boarding school graves, the mistreatment and contempt for Indigenous people, not just in Canada, but also here in the States, as well as throughout the world, many survivors and future generations struggle with what has now been coined as complex PTSD. And complex PTSD has been described as this. It's the symptoms of long-term trauma that were sustained during prolonged traumatic experiences, whereby people have been typically held in a state of captivity, whether physically, emotionally, or both. And in these situations, people feel under the control of an offender, let's say, and believe that they will never be able to escape from danger. I mean, such examples of complex traumatic situations include being held captive in a concentration or a prisoner of war camp, prostitution or child exploitation rings, prolonged domestic violence, and or prolonged physical, emotional, and even sexual abuse in children. And to these above examples of complex PTSD, I would also like to include exposure to residential boarding school living conditions that's now being defined as residential school syndrome. And residential school syndrome characterizes thousands of Indigenous adult victims and survivors who attended government-established and religious-based residential schools as children. And although many survivors report symptoms that are similar to complex PTSD, that is, like depression, anxiety, addiction, suicidal inclinations, rage, mental illness, their cause of their trauma is unique because of the stripping away of one's identity. And the question for you and I is, what are some ways in which these treatment of residential school syndromes are still being carried out today regarding how people are viewed? How are they being treated? What systems are still in place which create an inequality? And so on and so forth. And ironically, this phenomenon that has been going on has been the one aspect history has always underestimated about the voice of the human soul. It always has underestimated it, because for the longest time it was, well, if you're causing too much commotion, we don't like you, whatever the case is, we will just take care of you and you will exist no more. But, you know, truth has a way of rising to the surface. The human soul, the voice of the human soul, has a way of rising to the top and coming out. Because humanity has always attempted to silence people or societies or nations through, you know, orchestrated killings or murders or genocide or starvations or forced assimilations or humiliation and degradation, often defining people who are different from them as savage or primitive or backward or unworthy. Maybe they're unlovable and therefore, well, they may have been considered disposable. But nevertheless, this phenomena is not true for everybody, because for the majority of people who experience trauma, they can emotionally, physically, and psychologically process their pain. They can find their soul's voice. They can heal from their past. And yet, even when traumatic events result in physical deaths, the soul still can be heard. This is because we are energy in the purest sense, and therefore our souls have a distinct voice of their own. And not even death of the body can silence the soul, because if there's one prominent lesson that comes out of the field of physics, besides gravity and inertia, it's that energy can never be destroyed. It can only be transformed. And therein lies the healing for humanity, especially today's humanity. With all the problems that are going on in the world, all the pain and suffering, all the anger and the rage out there, where we've stopped listening to one another, we've stopped trusting one another. And it seems like, you know, can things get any worse? We are energy. Transform the negative energy. This is where true healing lies. So, how does all of this relate to living from your soul? Well, I want to share with you a story, because this story really brings home that how to live from your soul actually begins with understanding who we are not. Once upon a time, there was a man who lived hundreds of years ago, and being a simple man, his occupation was that of a washerman, you know, one who goes around and collects people's dirty laundry, loads them on his donkey, takes them down to the river, washes the laundry, lays them and puts them out on large rocks to dry. And then he folds the laundry carefully and he returns it all to his customers at the end of the day. Well, one day when he was collecting the laundry and taking it down to the river to wash it, he realized that he had forgotten the rope to which he would tie the donkey to a tree so that it wouldn't run off while he was washing the laundry. And once he realized this, he was so beside himself because he would lose a whole day's wage if he had to go back home and get his rope. He just didn't know what to do. Well, as he was standing there, not knowing what to do, a wise old man just happened to be walking by and just asked him if he was all right. And this washerman explained the situation to this wise man about forgetting his rope so he couldn't tie his donkey and he just didn't have time to go back and get it because he would lose all that money he would made in a day and so on and so forth. And as this washerman was explaining the situation, the wise man listened and then he smiled and he said, "Sir, don't worry. I have an idea. Just pretend to tie the donkey to this tree." "What do you mean, just pretend?" "Yes, yes, yes. Just pretend to go through the motions of tying your donkey to the tree. Only make sure he sees you do this." Well, as ridiculous as it sounded, the washerman did just that. He pretended to tie his donkey to the tree, and he made sure that the donkey was watching him the whole time. And then he took his laundry down to the river, and he began to wash it. And every now and then, the washerman would look back at the tree just to see what the donkey was doing. And the donkey was still there, eating grass and acting as if it is tied to the tree, perfectly content. And when the washerman finished with his laundry for the day, he loaded up his donkey and then he commanded the donkey to move. But the donkey did not move. It acted as if it had been tied to the tree all along. Now, the washerman thought he was really in a bind now because he can't get his donkey to move. So he runs and finds this wise man who told him to pretend tying the donkey to the tree in the first place. Well, he eventually found this man, and he explained the situation that now my donkey refuses to move because he thinks that he's still tied to the tree. And the man, again, listening to this, just smiled and, you know, he replied to the washerman that there was an easy solution. Just as he pretended to tie the donkey to the tree, now he needed to pretend to untie his donkey from the tree. Only make sure the donkey watches him do this. So the washerman goes back to the donkey and he starts to pretend he's untying the donkey. And he made sure the donkey was watching him. Then, with a stern voice, he commanded the donkey to move, and he and the donkey started to walk back home. Well, on the surface of this story, which, by the way, was told to me by my friends in India, on the surface, we might think to ourselves that the donkey in the story was just plain stupid, you know, being tricked into thinking it was tied when actually it was not. Because when you think about it, all the washerman did was simply go through the motions of tying and untying his donkey, which actually worked. And my friends in India have often used this story to demonstrate how, like the donkey, humanity thinks it's in servitude or some sort of bondage. In other words, humanity does not know that they are not the body, the mind, and the intellect, because we're independent of these things. There are no restrictions on you. There are no bondages. And so even if this body dies, we will not die. And the Vedanta scriptures and other sacred writings also tell humanity that the body and the soul are not one, They're different. And we're so limited in our understanding that by, you know, we think that we are bound by what we see and feel and hear and taste and touch, that we think that this is all there is. And we, like the donkey, end up believing the illusion that we are limited or restricted simply because we were told by another that we are. And unfortunately, we take that on as our identity, and we act accordingly, believing that this is as good as it's going to get. And I see this quite a bit in counseling people who identify and overly identify themselves with their problems or their illnesses. They are not aware of being more than what they have become so far in life. And so they often accept this distorted template that has been laid over top of their lives by somebody else. And as a result, people often tend to beat themselves up for making the same mistakes over and over again and again in their choices, relationships, and life. And yet, in this story, the donkey that is free all the time thinks that he's tied. Well, similarly, on a, let's say, metaphysical level, we who are souls believe we are tied to the body, that our soul is captive, and that seems to be the concrete truth. And at a physical level, we're bound to an endless desire to acquire things such as beauty, spiritual experiences, knowledge, wealth, fame, success, as well as the enjoyment of these things and the avoidance of the negative experiences in our lives, such as bad relationships or financial problems and so on and so forth. And as a result, we believe that somehow, some way, we have to find the key to our own prison. And unfortunately, that key, so to speak, people believe would just be coming in the form of more money or more freedom or more passion or more true love or any other desire. But what if we are already free? What if there's no rope? What if there's no tree? What if the illusion of being in a prison is an illusion? Now, I don't want to come across as one who minimizes another person's pain or their problems or struggles, but how might we be empowered if we saw ourselves as solutions to our problems by removing the layers of conditioning, or let's say the imaginary ropes that keep us tied to our problems? So let's ask ourselves some questions. What keeps us bound to toxic relationships? What keeps us thinking that there is nothing more to us because we've been told this about ourselves for all of our lives? And here's actually the irony in all this, that when we are able to truly see ourselves as souls, and ultimately, when we are able to realize ourselves as souls, and we begin to see others as souls, we're no longer willing to accept relating to people as anything less than them also being souls. I mean, how many times do we hear and see people calling for an end to violence, crime, and poverty? Interestingly, humanity has always struggled with these issues, but has never looked for the answers in the right places, because all too often has the focus been on the externals that have often caused such divisions in humanity since the beginning of measured time. And it is the externals that have produced these isms in the world: sexism, racism, ageism, classism, egoism, so on and so on. But when we focus on the soul of a person, all of these isms fall away. They simply cannot follow the language of the soul, the voice of the soul, because the soul is always found by looking inward. There's no more sexism. There's no more racism. No more ageism. No more egoisms. Isms do not have a voice in the matters of the soul. Because we are all beautiful souls made in the image of God, full of inherent value, dignity, and worth. And yet we may struggle. How many times do we struggle to accept this truth because our attention is often diverted to focus solely on outward appearances and behaviors? In other words, we all live with some degree of ignorance of our soul consciousness. We may get glimpses of it from time to time, but never able to attain the full extent because the physical, emotional, the psychological issues that cloud our vision of who we truly are. And for example, diseases, illnesses do afflict us in the body. We do feel physical and emotional pain with so much intensity at times that we believe they're going to break us in two. At times, our lungs may struggle to take a breath, or hunger and diseases cause our stomach, intestine, bones, muscles, and blood to scream in agony. And these experiences might make us question whether or not we are the soul whom God has created. And yet this illusion lies not in the suffering and pain and agony we experience, but rather it's in our perception that there is nothing more to us than an emotional, intellectual, and physical body. Indeed, the physical, emotional pain and suffering can temporarily drown out the cry of our soul, but our soul is never silenced. And furthermore, the truth is that the greatest strength of who we are as souls lies in our ability to transform and transcend the physical, emotional, and psychological limitations. For as much as history has shown us the horrific crimes humanity does to itself, there are just as many stories of humanity rising above such tragedies to heal and to reclaim their soul. I want to, in this broadcast, I want to share with you the lyrics of a song that was written by Kevin LaVar. And it's entitled "A Heart That Forgives." And when I heard this, and I knew I was going to be sharing this topic, I said, this is perfect. This is beautiful. Because this is how we start the transformational process. And Kevin LaVar, you know, he writes this song, but it's more like a prayer. It's more like a, this is what's in my heart. This is what I truly, truly desire. And again, you've been listening to me for a few years now, you realize that one of my favorite quotes comes from The Alchemist, and that is, once we make the desires of our hearts known, the whole universe conspires to make that happen. So, Kevin LaVar, "A Heart That Forgives." He writes, "I want a heart that forgives. I want a heart full of love, one with compassion, just like yours above, one that overcomes evil with goodness and love, like it never happened, never holding a grudge. I want a heart that forgives, that lives and lets live, one that keeps loving over and over again. One that man can't offend because your word is within. One that loves without price like you Lord Jesus Christ. I want a heart that loves everybody, even my enemies. I want to love like you, be like you, just like you did. I want a heart that forgives. I want a heart that forgives when the ones that are closest, that I've known, the longest hurt me the most. I still want to love them, just like you loved me. And even though I'm hurting, I want a heart that forgives. When the pain is so deep, and it's so hard to speak about it to anyone. Lord, I let go. Every person that has ever hurt me, God, I let it go. Every single hurt. God, I let it go. Every single pain. God, I let it go. I let it go. I let it go. Lord, you can have. Lord, you can have. Lord, you can have it. Lord, you can have it. You can have it now. You can have it now because I do not want it anymore. Well, as I said at the beginning, during this holiday season, however you choose to celebrate, let's focus on bringing light around all to further protect from the darker forces that are out there. So let there be light. And if we could focus on the light, it will make everyone stronger. So let's remember to thank God and offer whatever help we can with our own abundance, and especially thoughts of healing and light for all. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I invite you to join me in 2 weeks as we continue these discussions of integrating our spirituality and our mental health. But until that time, may everybody be safe. May everybody continue to look within to find their soul's voice, to live as light in a darkened world, to be love, to be grace, to be patience, to be love. Take care, and may God bless you.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.